Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Ditto. We're super excited for today's episode because Matt invited a pretty awesome guest onto our show. Matt, would you like to introduce us to our guest?
Yes, I would be more than happy to introduce our guest. By the way, I want to say thank you to this guy. He doesn't know me from Adam. He received a message from me. I think it was email, right? It's for how we first communicated.
Yeah.
And within, I think, 20 minutes, Zach, you responded. And I was astounded, like, wow, he's saying yes. And he doesn't even know me. And this is, I know we have some related contacts and everything, but I want to thank you sincerely. We want to thank you sincerely for coming on today.
Yes, thank you.
Who is this? So, Zach, correct me if I'm wrong, but your full name is... Is it Zacchaeus? Is
that Zacchaeus.
Zacchaeus. But you go by Zach.
Yeah, Zach. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, I read that and I was like, oh, that's so cool. I didn't know that. So Zach Moss, everyone, is our guest. For those especially from the beautiful state of Utah, you'll most likely recognize that name. He played for the University of Utah. I'm repping my U hat for those that are watching the video today. As a running back, so Zach, correct me if I'm wrong with some of these stats or some of these bio, if you will. 2016 to 2019, you were drafted in 2020, is that right?
Yep.
Okay. And had some decent years, if I'll say. You had three consecutive 1,000-yard rushing records, which broke school, first time in school history, and then you were a Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year as a senior. Those are some pretty good numbers, I will say. And then, like I mentioned, Zach, you were drafted in 2020 during COVID. Probably not the funnest time to be drafted, right? Like, how was that, by the way?
Yeah, that was definitely a weird time. Like, you know, just you work all this time to kind of get to this moment, and you always, you know, grow up watching stuff on YouTube and things like that. And you see, you know, so many people around there, like your families and your friends and, you know, kind of like having parties and things like that. So that's kind of, you know, how I kind of would have imagined it to be for myself, you know, especially, you know, once I left school and it was getting closer to that time. And then out of nowhere, we got hit with COVID and it just switched up so many different things. Like didn't even have a chance to come back to the school to do our pro day. You know, it was like I left in December and then that was kind of just automatically straight to the NFL. And that was a weird transition because you didn't do any of the things traditionally that you would do. Like I didn't meet some people in the building until like year three. Once things started finally calming down, you didn't have to wear a mask and, you know, some levels were like zoned off for us to go through and things like that. So, yeah, it was a weird time, but a good time in the sense of, you know, having something, you know, a dream that you work for come true and stuff like that.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, good perspective. And that was by the Buffalo Bills. I don't know if I mentioned that, right? In 2020, who drafted you. You were there for 2 years? 3 years?
3 years, yeah.
3 years, and then Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And that was for how long in Indianapolis?
So I was in, when I think about it, when I do the math myself, right? I was in Buffalo for 2.5, and then I got traded to Indianapolis. Was there for 1.5 years, and then I just did a full year my last season.
In Cincinnati.
So this is going into year six.
Year six with Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Perfect. Some personal stuff. You're from, correct me with pronunciation here, Hialeah Gardens. Is that how you say it?
Yeah. It's Hialeah.
Hialeah.
Yeah. So I'm not actually from that area. I've always tried to figure out how can I get that changed.
Okay. Where are you from?
So just Miami, Florida. So Liberty City. So it's about 15-20 minutes west of Hialeah. Right. But I went to high school out of my, you know, where I lived at. Yeah. So I went to a different high school. So they just figured out to kind of put that one there, and then it's just kind of followed me. And my friends kind of always joke about it. It's not a bad place to be from, but it's just
but it's not just where you're from.
Yeah, it's just not where you're from. It's a different vibe over there versus where we're from. So It's a funny thing because I always see it and I'm just like, you know what? It's what it is at this point.
Ashley, we need to call whoever this is and get this corrected. This is ridiculous. Okay, yeah. So this is funny. So you went from Miami, Florida to Salt Lake City, Utah.
Yep.
Much colder. And then you went even colder climate to Buffalo.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, how are those transitions, especially the one from Miami to Salt Lake City? What was that transition like coming to this state of Utah?
Honestly, like when I was, you know, going through it at that time, you know, I was more so just like eager and happy, more kind of like just wide eyed as a 17, 18 year old kid at the time. And not really thinking about, oh my gosh, I'm going all the way over here and it's going to be a culture shock and it's going to be all these different things. Like none of those things really were in my mind. I was just more happy that I was going to go play football. And for a school that liked to run the ball. So that was like a big thing for me. So I was just more like happy and eager about those things. But then like over the years, right, like I've always had people ask me, like, how did you get from Miami, right, to get from the University of Miami, you know, FSU, Florida, there's all these different schools you could have went to, FAU, FIU. How did you get from there all the way across to Utah? Right. And, you know, I always tell people, you know, I got lucky in the sense of, so for the recruitment for me, I wasn't even getting recruited from Utah until my senior year, like the last half of it. So I got an offer and Tyler Huntley and DeMarc Simpkins, two dudes I played with at Hollandale, they were already committed and they were going to enroll early and they were showing like highlights of our games and stuff like that on their visit up here. And the coaches kept asking about the guy who's playing running back. And they were like, oh, yeah, well, he's committed. I was committed to the University of Miami at the time. And I had two cousins that play at the University of Miami. And obviously, you got a kid from Miami, University of Miami, you're probably thinking he's going to stay. So they didn't really go hard at me. And then I decommitted from there. And then it kind of just opened up a lot of different things. And, you know, I was like just super happy to come out here. And then I saw the place and I mean, shoot, I still live here. So
yeah. I love that. What has attracted you to, you know, yes, stay here, but from my perspective, a fan's perspective, an alumni perspective, what attracted you to be at the U, to stay at the U, to have hopefully a good experience at the U? What about the University of Utah was unique, their program there?
Well, I just really like, you know, for one, they had communications, which was the degree I wanted to go under and do TV broadcasting. So that was big me to, you know, have that be there. And then obviously it's a really good campus. So it's like, honestly, like it always felt like I was going to be safe. I didn't have any issues, never felt any type of way. But then obviously having the program like Coach Witt, and all those guys up there and having that stability. Cause like when you're 18, you don't think about, oh my goodness, if my coach gets fired in my sophomore year or my junior year, how does that change things for me? Right. And then, you know, when I was in college, which was not long ago at all, but it sounds forever when you kind of phrase it that way. You had to sit out a year if you transferred. Right. So that was like something that was huge for me that somehow, some way at that age, I kind of did think about that, which was great. And I kept having it drilled in my head because Coach Witt had been there since 04 at the time. So, you know, that was huge because I knew whatever school I went to, I'm kind of a one and done guy. Like if I do something, I don't want to redo it. So once I do it, I try to give it the best I can. And that way I don't have to change things up. So going there, you know, I came out one time. I literally saw it one time. And it was January. So you can imagine how much snow, how cold it was. My first time seeing snow, you know, they took a snowmobile in, and things like that. So, and then like seeing mountains, like I had never seen mountains, and things like that. And especially these, cause these kind of feel like in a backdrop low key. So all those different things intertwined made it so easy for me to be like, yeah, okay, I'm going to go here. like, and I knew it would suck, like, leaving from, you know, being that far away from home, because, you know, my family didn't have the income to fly out every single week and just make that, you know, cross country fly all the time. And I had a chance to go to Tennessee, University of Tennessee. And I was like, man, that's a little easier, but things kind of just shaped up where I needed to be here. And it's been the best decision I've ever made. Like, I met my wife there. That's the reason I'm still here. But yeah, I met my wife there. We have two kids now and things like that. And, you know, it's, I couldn't imagine not coming to Utah versus going anywhere else and just imagining, like, where in the world, like, could I possibly be, you know, right now with, like, the structure I have around me and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. God, I love it. Well, as a University of Utah alum and a University of Tennessee alum, I'm really glad you went to Utah.
Oh, wow.
So thank you for going to the real U. I love it. Yeah, I remember watching you play when you were here, and one of many things that stood out to me, Zach, was your work ethic. And we just had Coach Scally on, what was it, a month ago, Ashley?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Month-ish. And he talked about Utah football culture. And one thing that both he and Whit, and really the whole staff, emphasized, yes, it's work, but it's like, you come in as a recruit and you're going to be us. We're not going to be you. Right. Yeah. And I know you heard that. I know it's like, yeah. It's on repeat in my mind. But it was evident, like, you bought into this and use your unique kind of individuality to strengthen an already existing strong culture.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. Talk to me about the culture, yes, at the University of Utah, what it was like being a player within it, and how it has shaped you, but also how your own individuality and your own uniqueness, you know, shaped it as well. I know there's a lot of questions in there. No, so if you need me to repeat anything, let me know.
No, you're good. That's a great question, honestly. You're going to become us, we're not going to become you thing was definitely something I struggled with for a while. That just brought back so many funny, like, every time I go over there, that's like the first thing that everybody talks about. It's like my freshman year. So I'm from Miami, obviously, right? And we believe in South Florida, we have the best football and the best athletes when it comes to football, right? Like, mm-hmm. not basketball, not track, not soccer, nothing else, right? We don't even look at those. So for me, I'm just like, okay. And fun fact about myself is that I started playing running back my junior year in high school, but it was half. It was only really part time. Like, I was like second, third guy. My main position all the way up until that time was linebacker. So I was a really late bloomer in football. And once I realized, I was like, no, I kind of want to play running back. But my junior year, I got my first offer from Appalachian State, and then I got the University of Miami. Okay. And I was kind of more just like in between on what I wanted to play, but I knew I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to play linebacker at the next level. I'm just not going to do that. So I made the switch to running back, and then I switched over to schools, and I ended up going to Hollandale. And I had a really good senior year, and, you know, that just gave me a lot of, like, you know, courage, and, like, I just felt really good about what I could do finally playing this position, and, you know, kind of finding, I wouldn't say a new love, but, you know, when you really like something that you find, you kind of keep wanting to feel that. So when I got to Utah, we had a guy named Joe Williams who was going to be the starting running back that year, senior.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I didn't want a red shirt, and I wasn't really worried about that at all after, you know, once I got there and, you know, the coaches were talking and stuff like that or whatever. But I just had a really hard time, like, turning off all that newfound confidence as a running back, and, like, wanting to just do it the way I was doing it, because I felt like I had success, obviously, in high school. But it's such a different ball game in college. And, you know, Coach Witt and that culture that they have, like, they really make you realize that this is the best thing for you, because football, and as you guys know, sports give you so much structure. It gives you so many different things that you, yeah. I always look at people who didn't play sports and I just be like, shoot, Like, they are totally different people, right? Like, they are just totally different. Like, I'm talking about, like, no sports, right? Like, not even literally forget high school. Just stop there, literally, like, no sports. And I'm just like, okay. You can tell they just don't have all of those different things that you kind of need that sports can give you. And, you know, they really honed in on those different things at a whole different level. So, like, for me, I made a huge jump once I bought in. I bought in really 2017 after I broke my arm. Cause that gave me, it was just like I was just in a different mind space that I had never been in before. And it was spring game and, you know, we're getting ready and I'm projected to be the starter and I do that and just like killing me. Right. But once I really bought into things, man, I was able to really just, you know, take things by the horn and really just continue to get better as a player, but find ways to still do it with a new mental, with a new group of guys, the way we kept building things like that. And I think, you know, that's why we have such a really good class that I came in with, the 2016 class. We all still talk to each other. We had 9 guys drafted in our class. And that was the year I felt that even though we didn't win any Pac-12 championships, you know, we went to 2, lost both, but that was those guys that played behind us and under us, like they really saw what it felt like to be a family, right? Because a lot of places, you know, say that all the time, but it's really hard to bring in different people from different perspectives, different cultures and all this type of stuff and really be like, okay, turn off that selfish factor and like I'm going to play for the guy next to me on my left and my right each and every snap, right? And we were able to do that as that class. And, you know, we like to think that we helped the school, you know, when the next 2 Pac-12 championships that they won and now being in the Big 12 and all those different things, we're like, okay, we feel like we helped really grow that foundation. And that was a big thing that we give all credit to Coach Witt and those guys. And obviously, as players, you have to buy into it. And we really did. And I mean, it works. Like every time I see a guy that's in like scouted or something like that from different teams across the NFL, you know, they really have respect for the guys that come out of Utah because of the culture, right? They know what they're getting, right? You don't have the character issues, right? You're not going to see guys, like, if you really think about it, right? Like, you're not going to find guys from the University of Utah that played there in the news media every other year or every other whenever, right? Like, so, like, they really appreciate what Coach Witt and those guys have built. And that's why they keep, doesn't matter where the guys get drafted, if it's the 1st, 7th undrafted, guys are able to, you know, really carve out a career for themselves because they know how to do it the right way. And, you know, play for the people around them, which is really hard to find, man.
Yeah. It was astounding to me, Ashley, when we had Coach Scully on. He was talking all about this. And I remember he said, we tell our guys, if it's about you, go run track, go play singles tennis. Like, this is a team sport, and we win as a team. And they get it so much, and it sounds kind of egotistical. It sounds maybe rude. I don't know what the word is. But they understand when the collective is bought in, you find success, both on and off the field. And that's what I love about this staff and the culture that Coach Witt has created up there. Ashley, okay, so, Zach, I know you might not know this about Ashley, but she was, for lack of a better term, a baller in college. You were probably one of the best, if not the best college player to play college soccer during your time, Ashley. And she is now still in the professional ranks. Ashley, just briefly, can you speak to Zach's language of buying into the collective? Because just like football, soccer is a team sport. I mean, your perspective on that too, Ashley, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, I 100% agree. It's like you said, a lot of people will say like, oh, we have a family here and like whatever, yada, yada, yada. But when you actually find a group that's really bought into the collective, it really is something special. And you never forget those teams that you're a part of because it's really cool and it is really, really hard to like replicate. A question that I have for you is, what was that transition like going from college, having that stability of, you know, 4 years building that good group, that collective, and then going from college to the pro ranks. Like, how was that transition for you? And what, like, as you look back at all the teams that you've been a part of, have you been close to replicating that with any of your teams at the professional level? Or is it just so much harder because pros have so many different factors?
Good question.
So the first question, for me, it was pretty, not, I wouldn't say easy, but it was definitely, you know, something I had to really work on. Because, you know, once you're going in there right now, you're not just a player, you're an investment. And some people have a hard time really trying to understand that and learn that early on. And thankfully, I had some really good vets when I was in Buffalo my first year, especially that, you know, kind of took me under their wing a little bit and just kind of like just educated me on, hey, man, like, just because you're here doesn't mean you're going to be here. Like, I've had multiple different teammates that sat next to me in lockers in like a 6-10 week span that is kind of just crazy. But it's like, that's what the business is. And it is a business first. Right. Like, and, you know, now I'm the second oldest guy in our room, in our running back room, because those are the guys that you affect the most, like the people you're around every day. So, you know, I tell them, like, man, like, it doesn't matter if you're doing something good right now. Like, you have to figure out a way to continue to be consistent each and every day. And that's not something that they kind of tell you in college, because you have the 4 years to build, like, the college isn't going to cut you or trade you or do anything like that. So it's like, if you suck, you kind of just suck, and then you wait until you decide to leave, right? The school is not really going to force you out. It's just going to sit you down. So like, that's a whole different mental part of the game that you have to develop, and you have to develop it really, really fast, because no, like, a lot of guys are, and that's the job of the vets, is to take the young guys, teach them, and really let them understand as much as they can right away and early on. But to the second part of that question, like, if I've been able to replicate that, no. I think it's just, like you said, like, it's just so many different parts of the pro athlete life. It's, some have kids, some have a wife, some have girlfriends, fiancés, right? Some don't. Some like the party, some don't, some game. It's just so many different things that you have. And then the obvious thing is the age gap, right? Like, okay, you come in at 22, 23, you playing with a guy who's 32, 33, he's got maybe 2-3 mortgages somewhere. he's got like 4 cars and 2-3 different big, like, it's a lot of different stuff, right? That you're walking in this thing, you don't got nothing, you barely got any credit. It's just like a lot of different things that you're just like, okay, what can I bond over with?
Yeah.
With this guy who's been in the league for 9 years? Not much, bro. So you kind of just hang with the guys that are obviously year one, two, because they're kind of still considered rookies to some degree, unless they're like a big megastar or something like that. So you kind of just hang with those guys, because you're technically all going through the same things. They're trying to find your footing and find a place in the league. And then those are the guys you really kind of build those relationships off the field and have those when you leave teams and you go different teams and stuff like that. And then for me, like, playing on different teams, I've always felt like I've had really good teammates, you know, guys that weren't selfish and things like that. But it's all been totally different. You know, in Buffalo, I felt that was like a really good culture of family. In Indy, I felt like they were still building that. And then in, now being in Cincinnati, we're still working on that part still, is trying to figure out our identity. And when you have teams that have identity issues, it's really hard for you to go out there and win games, because everyone's not on the same page. Everyone's not bought in on the same level. Everybody's not doing what they need to be doing and moving in one sound. So it's different. And I always tell people, just kind of look at that, because in Buffalo, there's not much to do at all in Buffalo, if anything. So you have no choice but almost to be a family. It's like, you're hanging out all the time at each other's houses. You're doing, you know, all these different activities together and stuff like that. And you have to, you know what I mean? You're going to different, you know, if it's Toronto, going to New York City or whatever like that for a couple of days, you're doing it together. And that really does, you know, help a ton. And it helps when you have coaches and, you know, the people in the staff that really focus on those different things, because when you don't have the focus on those things, obviously a lot of things just weed through the cracks, and then you're stuck trying to now get weed out of cracks, and that's pretty hard to do.
Yeah, definitely. Well,
I'm sure you can only go to Niagara Falls so many times when you're in Buffalo.
Yeah, and I've been to Niagara Falls plenty of times.
It's still on my bucket list, but
it's amazing. But I don't once you see it, right, it you're you, done.
Man. Yeah.
I don't want to dampen it for you, but it was to a point. So I was like, you know what? Once I started having like family come after COVID a little bit, I was like, yeah you guys can go. I'm not driving just to go see it again.
Yeah. That's how I feel about the DC monuments. Every time my family's out here, I'm like, I've seen it way too many times. You guys go ahead.
Okay, so we're on the same thing. You haven't seen Niagara, and I haven't seen the monuments, and that's something
perfect.
I actually want to
do. We'll just switch.
That'd be nice. Speaking of Zach, that sec. So this might be the most important question we have on here. Cincinnati chili, yay or nay?
Well, I had a bad experience with it.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I have some chili in the fridge right now. So that's a great reminder. I'll probably do that after this. So when I first got there, I signed the contract and do all this little media stuff, whatever. So that was one of the things that they had us do was, you know, put the chili on the hot dog and stuff like that. I think the timing was just bad because everything was cold. So it was really hard to, and it was on camera and they're recording it and you're just trying to push through this thing. but the hot dog is cold, the chili's cold, the cheese, I'm just like, if it's hot, you know, I'll give it a chance.
It's not bad, right? When it's hot.
A lot of people love it. They have it in the airports. So if you have
Skyline, right? Isn't Skyline the go-to kind of?
Yeah, Skyline. Like
main one.
If you have that in the airport, that means a lot of people like it. And that's really risky, eating chili before flights. Yeah. Just my two cents. I don't know.
I would agree. Ditto.
So we lived in Oxford, Ohio. So just like 40 minutes north of Cincinnati there.
Okay.
And I think we went to Skyline maybe three times over the course of 2 years. And it was fine. I mean, I feel like you have to really put all the onion and all the cheese and like really load it up.
Yeah.
To make it good. Otherwise, it's just spaghetti. In my opinion, it's not really chili unless you really load it up. But anyways, that was my most important question. Back to relationships. You mentioned a lot. Ashley brought this up, which I think is really interesting. And this is one of the questions we wanted to ask you, one of many. When you think back to a coach and or teammate, this is either at the University of Utah or even in high school and maybe even here in the professional ranks, what's been the most powerful thing a coach and or teammate has said or done that has stuck with you and why?
You know, it's funny. When I read that, when you guys sent over the questions and I read that and I was like, man, I've had a lot of coaches, a lot of different things and stuff like that. And I knew it was one, but I could not remember. Like my brain was just all the way off and I was like, what? But then as soon as you read it again, it just popped in my mind just now, which was nice. But so I had a coach who I credit a lot of my success to, Coach McDonald at the University of Miami, University of Utah. He was my running backs coach from 17, so for 3 years. So sophomore year to senior year. And he came from Eastern Washington, smaller school. And I mean, this dude would just, you talk about just working like just crazy hours, right? And I used to be like, bro, he's crazy. He's doing too much. Like, I did not like how much it was because then when you get to practice, it was a ton as well. And he helped me just because, like, I saw his work ethic as a coach. And I was like, okay, well, my coach can't be outworking me, right? And in that way, right? So, you know, once I realized that this dude was really committed to helping me get better, because like I said, at that time when he met me, I was going into my third year playing running back. So I'm still trying to learn all the little nuances of like footwork stuff, reading holes, reading gaps. Like 2017, I was just out there playing off of athleticism and, you know, God given ability and trying to figure it out. I didn't figure it out until like week eight. And then my junior year, you know, was, I feel like, my best season. And I played that whole year on a torn meniscus, and I didn't even know. Wow. So I played 9 games on a torn meniscus, and I felt like at my athletic ability, you know, shape, like how you feel strength-wise, all those different things, I was like, that's my best year. And find out I have a torn knee, which is nice.
Wow.
And the senior year was kind of, you know, once you've played for so long, right, you've seen all the defenses, you kind of know everything that's kind of going to happen. That was like more of me just playing mentally more than anything physically. But to your question, and I just give him all that credit because like we still talk to this day. He's actually the running backs coach at the Los Angeles Chargers now.
Oh,
cool. And that's just how it speaks to how hard he's worked and how, you know, goddamn good he is at what he does.
Yeah.
But his number one saying to me and all the guys in our room was control your controllables. Right. Like control the things you can control. Like a lot of times you hear, you have coaches that tell you, well, if you have some stuff going on outside of here, leave it out there. Right. But that's not helping you. Right. Like that's just at the moment in time, you know, just putting it off to the side or whatever. And then you have to pick all that back up after you just took whatever you might get in this meeting. Right.
Yeah.
But control your controllables. And that was huge for me because in college, you know, it was different things going on that I had to control myself, which wasn't a huge test. But when I got to the NFL, you know, it's a lot of things that go on that you don't control. Right. And it's very, very, very easily to stress out about one, your income, your life, like all these different things. Like you want to do these different things, take care of your family and, you know, wife and kids and stuff like that. Like, and you don't have any control technically. Like you see good players get cut. You see good players get traded. So it's like you don't really have full control. So that was big for me because even when I had my ups and my downs and I was going through injuries and going through surgeries, like that always has played in my head. Just control your controllables. Control your control. Like control how I feel. Control what I can do. Control how I show. Control how, you know, when I walk in the training room, how I feel and treat the people in there. You know, because every injury is not – fun. No injury is fun, but like when you have surgeries, and I had a really bad ankle surgery my first year in the NFL, and coming back from that was really hard. That off the field thing is also going on. That was really hard, and I just had to learn and grow so much, and controlling my controllables, which I still live by to this day, has been easily the best thing that a coach has taught me. Because it has more to do with my life than football. Football, you're lucky if you play to 30, right? So you see some guys playing 35 and 40, you're like, all right. You think, most people think, oh, that's, no. Most guys in our NFL league are out of there by 2 years. That's the life expectancy in the NFL, it's 2 years. So you come out of college, you're 25, 24 years old, and now you're just pivoting in life, trying to figure out,
totally.
I did not plan for this. Like, what am I going to do now? And, you know, for me, controlling my controllables, controlling my emotions, how I treat the people around me, you know, how I work out, how I train, how I do this, how I do that. You know, that's been, you know, easily the number one thing for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, we've heard that a few times, right? Control the controllables.
Yeah, just a few times. Yeah, well, that was actually going to be one of my questions I was going to ask you, which you probably answered it with this lesson that you learned about controlling the controllables. But you've experienced a trade. I've experienced a trade, and I wasn't wanting it or expecting it, and I feel like that was the first time that, like, professional world slapped me in the face, because I was like, wow, I really have no control over where I play and what team I play with. Can you kind of give us some insight into how you were able to kind of handle that trade, whether you were wanting it or not?
Yeah, so actually I was wanting it, which was huge for my career to get out of Buffalo. And I love my time in Buffalo. I love the people there and the coaches and the players and things like that and the fans. But just on field, things weren't adding up because the style of offense that we played and the style of a running back I am. So things just didn't add up. And I was in my third year there. And, you know, we asked for a trade. And it was the day of the deadline. So I remember vividly, I was in the weight room. It was a Tuesday. It was an off day, ironically. It was a Tuesday off day, and I'm working out early in the morning like I usually do. And our head coach comes upstairs. I'm on a Peloton, and we have just a really quick chat that, hey, man, we know you wanted to get traded and things like that, but, you know, it's not going to work out this year, right? Because I guess they couldn't find a trade partner or whatever, right? You know, I don't know the background of why he had that conversation with me at that moment. But I was like, well, that sucks because I'm not really playing as much right now. And it's like here and there, you just never really know. And that's really hard as athletes. Like, am I playing or not, right? Like, because you train a certain way, you prepare a certain way to play versus when you don't, you can easily fall into that trap of just getting lazy, right? Oh, let me have 2 glasses of wine tonight since I'm not playing Sunday, right? Or let me eat this. You know, it's just really easy just to get off your routine because your routine, to stay on the routine, is already super exhausting. And, like, you always want to find a way to get out of it. and so when you have those little things moving and you're just like, oh, nice, I can eat ice cream over here right now, or, you know, just little things like that. It was like I had that moment. And then I left, I went home, and I started playing 2K, the video game, with my friends. And it was like 2 o'clock maybe, and I get a phone call. I look at my phone. I didn't answer it because it was an unknown number. I was like, I don't answer unknown numbers. I was like, don't know that number. So I just let it ring out. It calls me back again in like 30 seconds. So I was like, it's weird. It's the same number. So I answer it. And it was a Buffalo area code. So I was like, okay, cool. I answered it. So I answered it, and it was one of the guys that worked for the Bills. And he's like, hey, man, we need you to come up here real quick. I live, like, as easy as I can see my backyard, as easy as I can see the stadium from my apartment. So I just hopped on my bike, and I rode over, right? And I walk in, and I'm just thinking, oh, okay, well, maybe he's going to tell me, you know, I'm going to meet the GM, and he's going to tell me, hey, we couldn't do this, and da-da-da, and this is kind of what we're looking for from you for the rest of the year, you know, to, you know, not be in a slump or whatever, stuff like that. I get in there, and the GM's not even in there yet. The head coach is in there, and me and the head coach have a really good relationship. Me and the GM have a really good relationship. It was more so just the offense and my play style not meshing. And they did me a really, really cool solid, which you don't rarely see. They did me a really, really solid just by saying, man, we're going to take less for this guy to get out of here and go play somewhere. And by them doing that, like, the head coach had told me I'm getting traded, and the GM was still on the phone finishing the trade.
Oh, wow.
And it was like 10 minutes right before the deadline. So I'm thinking, I'm coming in there just for like a pep talk type thing, and it's going to be a long ass 2 months plus playoffs for myself, and then got to still go out there in super cold weather. I'm like, oh boy. And all of our primetime games were always at night in Buffalo, which is fun.
Oh, gosh.
So I'm thinking I'm getting ready for that. And ironically, it's a trade to send me somewhere where they love to run the ball, where this team also, the GM there, Chris Ballard, who's one of the best people I've met in the NFL, the GM for the Colts, you know, I automatically on the phone with him, and it just made me feel, you know, wanted and, you know, all those different things as an athlete that you kind of want to go give a new place, you know, the best of yourself. But that's why I always, like, have, like, love and respect for Buffalo, just those two guys upstairs, the way they did it and handled it. And then going to Indy. So, like, I wanted it. Obviously, now all the things that come with it, because it still was a shell shock, because it was like, okay, I wanted this, but I didn't know it was going to happen. So you still get both of those different things in there mixed together. So then, like, my wife, which was my girlfriend at the time, like, I had to come back home and tell her, and she was sleeping. And then we had just found out that she was pregnant, like, maybe week before that or a couple days. So I was like, oh, nice. Great timing to try to move from Buffalo to Indy. And I didn't know, like, because for us, I don't know how it works for you guys, but, like, for us, I was there on Thursday in Indy.
Yeah.
So I dropped everything, left everything.
2 days.
Yeah. And really, I forced 2 days because it was Tuesday afternoon that I got traded. Wednesday morning, I should have been there because we had practice. So I was supposed to be there for Wednesday. And they were like, what do you want to get? I was like, I have to push this to Thursday because this is like, I have to push this to Thursday. So I was out of there early morning Thursday, and now I'm in a whole entire different place, different state, different culture, different people. Just like, bro, what is happening? And then it was just all so fast that you don't really get. That's why I always tell people, it's like, you don't get a chance as an athlete to really feel stuff. Like, a lot of the time you just have to just go, like, because things happen and you don't get a chance to, like, I didn't ever get a chance to, you know, back to when you talked about, like, the records, I never felt like I accomplished anything. I just felt like, okay, I did that, next, right? When I got drafted, you know, I was like, okay, did that, next. Played NFL now for going on 6 years. I'm like, okay, I'm doing that. But you don't feel like you get to, you know, reap those benefits of those good feelings until you're actually done.
Yeah, interesting.
And that's how I've always done things in my head, which can be a good and a bad thing sometimes. Not for myself, but, like, my wife hates it sometimes. But it's just, that's just how we're built to some degree, which is why also we're able to do the things that we're able to do. Like, if we have an injury and we're sitting here trying to feel these injuries, like, oh my gosh, this injury really hurts, then you can't play hurt, right? You can't play injured. If you're just thinking about it all the time. So it's like, it's good and it's bad in there. I think the middle ground in that is acknowledging it and knowing that it's there. And then once you acknowledge that, like, try to do your best, because it's really hard to turn it off once you've been wired, like, wait for years. Try to do your best to give yourself the grace of what you've been able to do, and that not so many people are able to do. And then you've been able to do it for a consistent amount of time, no matter the different levels, right, that there are in our pro sports, right? You have different levels in every sport of people, but at the end of the day, it's really hard to be on any one of those levels at any given time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the word acknowledgement. Ashley and I have talked about this extensively. Acknowledgement, aka acceptance, it goes, in my opinion, synonymously with the controllables. You're acknowledging, you're accepting, this is what I can control in this situation. Usually it's my attitude, my preparation, my effort, everything else. I'm just going to kind of acknowledge and accept what's going on. So that was Buffalo to Indy. What about Indy to Cincinnati, especially psychologically, emotionally? What was that process like?
That was a lot easier, mainly because I knew that was going to happen because I was a free agent.
Okay.
So that was a totally different ball game for me. It was more so just trying to pick the right place for myself and my family, like, for your career, and then, you know, trying to figure out the family aspect and the people you're going to be, you know, mingling with it every single day. And we had a little boy at the time, and now we have a little girl. So, you know, it was a lot of different thoughts that you kind of have versus just football oriented. But that was a lot easier in the sense of, okay, like, I know I have somewhere to go. I know I'm going to be signed to the team, you know, coming off the year I had and stuff like that. It was bittersweet because we really loved Indianapolis and the people there. And, like, we grew a lot there, which was really, really fun. And it was just a really good place, like, with the guys, with the off the, you know, feel life and having different things to do. Cause sometimes you need, like, just a mental break somewhere in the season. and you don't always want to go to dinner. You don't always want to go do this. Sometimes, like, it was nice to, like, in Indy, they have the Pacers. So, mm-hmm. and the Pacers just happened to be doing good that year, and they did good this season as well. Right. So it was, like, nice to have those little different things. So it was a lot of things that we would feel like we were going to miss out on and all those different things. But, you know, it was a new opportunity, new challenge to go to Cincinnati. And, you know, it was more of a, you know, we feel good about this move versus kind of feeling rushed and panicked and all over the place from going from Buffalo to Indy.
Yeah. And you were craving Cincinnati chili, so you had to get out of there.
Can't forget about that one.
I have a question about your family here in just a minute. But before I ask it, I have to ask this other question before I forget it, because I know myself. I was watching the documentary Quarterback last mm-hmm. night, and you happened to be on there, Zach.
I watched the whole thing, actually, already.
It's a great documentary. So first off, I want to ask you, Joe Burrow, well, let me first say, amazing quarterback, really interesting human being. So what's it like playing with Joe Burrow in Cincinnati right now? I need to ask you.
I was telling people, so I played with Josh, and we always knew Josh was going to be MVP of the league. Like, it was never a matter of if, it was just win. And I think the 3 years I was there, I think he finished behind Aaron Rodgers maybe twice, and maybe a third place finish in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. So, like, I knew and I saw what one of the best, you know, three or five, whatever you want to put them, quarterbacks looked like at a high level each and every week, right? Yeah. Like, I saw that, and I saw what a quarterback of that caliber means to a city, the whole nine, right? So, you know, once I got to Indy, it was different because you had a rookie quarterback, and then we had Gardner Minshew, who was, you know, more of just kind of a journeyman to some degree. And Gardner was a really good leader and stuff like that. But it was just, obviously, it's different. So then you go, so that when I knew I was going to Cincinnati, I'm like, oh, snap, I want to play with Joe Burrow. And I was like, I know the two receivers we have, right? And as a running back, if you have two really good receivers and a really good quarterback, that makes life so much easier, right?
Yeah.
But Joe is so different from Josh, because Josh is like a 6'5", 250 big kid, yeah. right? Joe is like tuxedo, locked in, laser focused every single day type of mm-hmm. a person. Like the first time I met him was OTAs, and he had hurt his wrist, as you saw on there, and he was kind of coming back from that, and like, it was never a day where I don't think he wasn't locked in, ever. Mm. Like, I remember just OTAs for us is voluntary stuff. It's, you don't really go hard in it until, like, the last couple of days. But, I mean, this dude had, like, the intensity, the fire, like, that leadership spewing out of him in that way of, like, just trying to make sure everybody's, like, as good as they can be right now, because that's what he's doing, right? Mm. Like, he was working super hard to get back. And I remember I was like, man, this dude's going to be the MVP. I was telling my friend, like, he's going to have an MVP season, because I've never seen anybody be locked in from April to September. Like, that's just not that style. Like, it was, obviously, I've never been around Kobe Bryant, but you always hear stories, and I'm just like, bro, it had to be something like this on some level. Like, it was all the time, like, round the clock. Wow. Like, It was crazy. And I was like, he's going to be the MVP. Now, he had MVP numbers, moments, the whole nine. Now, team says flopped there, which kind of ruined that for him. But the dude was, you've never seen, I think I watched that the other day, and he had a stat on there where it was only Tom Brady in 2007 and Aaron Rodgers in 2011 that had the same amount of yards, touchdowns, and interceptions. And I was like, wow. You're talking about Brady, the best ever. You're talking yeah. about Rodgers, who's arguably one of the most, probably the most talented quarterback ever. And then you put Joe Burrow's season in that, and that only amounted to, I think we had 8 wins or 9, something like that, right? And it's just like, as a team, you feel bad because you wasted a once in a lifetime type of season. But it just made me think about, yo, this dude is really, really, really good because he's not physically gifted like a Josh or, you know, like a Lamar Jackson and even Jalen, like all these different quarterbacks that you see. A lot of these guys that are really good now, they're kind of more dual threat-ish. Mm-hmm. He's not that. He's everything for him is neck up, and him being that cerebral from neck up is ridiculous because he's such a technician. He's like watching him in practice, like talking to the guys, like, hey, it's going to be this type of a throw rather than this type of a throw. Wow. Like, even for myself, like Josh is super strong, so Josh can throw a ball with the velocity of that. Sometimes it's like, yo, bro, cool it just a little bit. I'm only 5 yards away from you, right? Because he's more so his arm talent is crazy. Joe's arm talent is not on those levels of, you know, he can throw a ball 80 yards off his back foot, all these different type of things, right? For him, it's a lot about foundation, base, and, you know, like I said, technician. But for him, he's so, like I said, everything's so mental for him. It's like, even I'm running a flat route, like the way he can throw a ball and read a defender that's about to, you know, make a play on me, it's like, hey, it's like, do you like this? When this guy, because I could tell the guy's there, but just reading the ball, do you want the ball to like turn you back in? Do you want the ball to catch it and freeze frame it? Or do you want that ball to keep taking you to the sideline? Or if it's a, you know, what we call over the ball OTBs, like where you just run 5 yards, stop right over the ball, wherever the ball was placed as a running back. If the guys, because you can't see that, right? Like now, once my back is turned to defense, I have no idea who's about to come and kill shot me, right? But he can see that. And some quarterbacks don't truly think about this, right? Because you have the pressure on your feet. You got the O-line, D-line right there. Some guys don't think about this. But he really does think about it where he's like, okay, if this guy is on his right, I'm going to throw the ball on his left. That way I can turn and get 2-3 extra yards. It doesn't even matter if I just catch it. If he just threw it regularly and I got tackled, I was like, oh, we got 5 yards. He's always thinking about those little hidden yards, those little hidden things. And you kind of seen this a little bit of that with, you know, when he talks with Jamar. And you see the connection they have. Like, you don't just have that connection from just being a really good receiver and a really good quarterback. Like, you have to be on the same page mentally about a lot of different things. And, you know, that's where his advantage is. And, like, he really showed a lot of it, having a really good, you know, healthy season for sure. Helped a lot, but he's different from that up. Like, I don't think I've definitely never played with somebody who's that cerebral in the way they go about literally each and everything. Like, no, for sure.
Yeah, it was fascinating to watch. Ashley, have you seen the documentary yet?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
This is season 2. Highly recommend it.
Yeah, I think I saw season 1, but I haven't seen the newest.
I think you did. I remember talking to you about season 1, but season 2 is equally as good. There's a reason. So he goes like this, points to his wrist after some plays or a game, and it's like ice in his veins. And he only does it like on really certain occasions. He doesn't, from what I know, he doesn't always bust out that celebration. But it's amazing to watch somebody like him, especially mentally, do what he does and how he does it. And I loved seeing you in there, Zach. I mean, you almost stumbled and fell on that play, but you ended up scoring a touchdown.
He caught me off guard with that one because speaking so highly of his cerebral part of his game, that probably definitely was not one of his smartest plays. And he admitted that on there.
That's funny.
Because it's super rare. Usually on that type of a play, you're just a decoy for somebody else. And I just try to get out there as fast as I could to, you know, if they're in man coverage, to make your guy run with you, or if they're in zone, so you can just space out things and get to that more of a, like a triangle type offense, and make that spacing so he can read it really fast and get the ball out or whatever. And right before halftime, it's like 5-6 seconds on the clock. I'm not thinking about catching this ball. I'm not thinking about nothing. I'm just like, okay, literally before the play, I'm just like, all right, bro, just turn, run, and get out there as fast as you can, as far as you can, and just get out the way and let them figure that out, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's nice because you get a breather play in the game. And he's like, oh, nice. I don't have to, you know, show up right now. I get a playoff or whatever. I was like, let me just make this look really nice. And then he ends up throwing the ball. And I was like, whoa. So I caught it, thankfully, because that would have been bad if I dropped it, right? I caught it. And I think, like, my momentum just, like, made me fall to the ground because I was trying to move faster in my mind than I could in my body at that moment. Mm. And I slipped. Thankfully, the corner kind of slipped as well. And I got up and it was able to get in. And it was like a really funny moment on the sideline. Yeah. Even some more in the locker room I didn't catch, but it was just like, yeah, thank you for saving my ass, bro. If I get Taku right there on the one, we don't get any points. We have no timeouts. It's going to be and we're playing the Panthers. It was probably going to be a nice little earful for him probably at halftime. Making that play.
That's hilarious. Well, it was fun to watch. Thanks for saying all that. So here's a question. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you this in our episode here. You have on your Instagram, Zach, Christ, husband, father, below your name. If you don't mind, talk to us about the role both faith / religion / spirituality, however you want to coin it, and your family. I know you said you're a husband, you're a father of two. What do these two categories play in your life as a professional football player in the NFL?
Yeah. What kind of role do they play? Well, faith has always been number one for me. You know, I grew up in a Christian home, and, you know, we were just always in church, felt like, as a kid. twice on Sundays, Tuesday nights, and Thursday nights. Oh, and my mom still does that. Yeah, my mom still does that now. Jeez. And, you know, usually sometimes parents don't want to get their kids out late on the, you know, school week. So you would think we wouldn't go on a Tuesday night at 8 o'clock and get back at like 10:30, which we did. And then you went to school. So like that was just, you know, my life forever. And then sports was always something, like I said, like being down there, you always play sports. And I come from a big family on both sides, on my mom and dad's side. Both my mom and dad have 8+ brothers and siblings. Wow. So all my friends were my cousins. And we always just played sports and stuff like that. So that's how I feel like those two meshed so early for me. And then obviously as I got older and got into, you know, high school and even to college, you know, faith changed for me because it was more so on me and me having to find that and what that looked like for myself. And, you know, just even just putting it into my routine in college. And I've always felt like I know that that's the only reason I have any of the success I've ever had. And it's a journey that you have to go on. And I've been lucky to know some really good people who have helped me a lot. Also been able to find some teammates that you can talk to about this stuff in locker rooms. Because not everybody is just one, like I'm not a very outright, you know, type faithful person where I don't just throw it at you all day. But, and that can be hard sometimes not being able to do that with certain people in your locker room. And then you have some people I've played with guys that don't believe in anything. So it's really been a big thing for me, and it continues to be. Obviously, I think for me, like going through different surgeries, I've had 4 different surgeries. What did I have? I can't remember. Ankle, I've done my forearm twice. In the same spot. And then I did my knee, obviously my junior year in college. So like, if I didn't have faith in any of those moments, right. Or take something less catastrophic as not say injuries, but just like everyday life, just like waking up, trying to find a purpose every day, things can be tiring, things can be stressful. You know, it's not always fun to do certain things, but like, if I didn't have faith, I don't know where I would be, you know, mentally each and every day, you know, even my stress level. Like, I don't really stress at all. Like, obviously I do, because I wear a Whoop watch, and it has the
that'll
the
tell
things
you
on there. Yeah. So like for a while, I used to think I didn't. My wife would make jokes like, "Oh, you're so zen," and you know, I felt like there's nothing that I was really doing. I always felt like I just control my controllables, and I gave it to God, right? Like, if it's supposed to happen, it'll happen. If it's not, it won't. And it's all in His timing. It's not in my timing. It's His timing. It's perfect. Hence the hat with the seven on it. So, you know, I was just, I've always been like that, no matter what I've kind of been through. I feel like, you know, yeah, I had hard growing up and, you know, when I was growing up and stuff like that, hardships there. But I look at my hardships and be like, I'm blessed I didn't have some of the other hardships other people have had, right? Like, you know, you meet some people who just think that their hardships are more than somebody else's. And for me, I feel like I haven't done that in my life just because of my faith. Because, yes, we're supposed to have hardships. We're supposed to go through trials and tribulations. And all my trials that I've been through, I've always kept God first. And He's seen me through on each and every one. I mean, I broke my arm and ended up still being able to keep the running back spot as a sophomore. And returning from that, I tore my knee and everyone thought I should have came out of school early as a junior, came back another year, solidified my relationship with my wife because we had only been dating for a couple of months. So you don't know if you leave to go to the NFL and just doing that long distance, how that kind of looks. You ended up breaking some more records or whatever like that. And, you know, we did some really good things as a team as well. And I just grew as a person. And I met different people that I don't think I probably would have met if I would have left in 2018 versus 19. So all those different things, it's like, okay, you can look at things negative, but there's always God on the other side of those things showing you that, you know, everything that you went through, that you did, was meant for you. And it was best for you, right? So that's how I've always tied faith and sports and family together. And I think it's just as simple as, you know, growing up, just being in church all the time and playing sports with my cousins on Sundays before we went back to church. And just that being the base foundation for me. And then just growing that as the years have, you know, gone on and as they hopefully will continue to go on. You know, and trying to figure out what that continues to look like for myself and now being, like I said, a husband, father of two kids, that I also want to follow that same path, and my wife as well, obviously, as I have, and we can do that together as family.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for sharing that. That was beautiful. It's amazing what faith and family, for a lot of reasons, but one is the, you know, the purpose and the why that they can provide individuals regardless of whatever domain, whatever occupation they might be in. So yeah, really absolutely appreciate you sharing that. Ashley, do you have any other questions for Zach? I think I got most of the stuff I wanted to get.
I think we grilled him. So
I know. We went like 15 minutes over what I thought we would. 20 minutes. Oh gosh. Yeah, we better
end here soon.
No, but yeah,
Ashley,
thanks so much.
Should we wrap it up? Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was just gonna say thanks so much for hopping on with us and sharing your story and sharing your experiences. I think it's really cool to hear another athlete's like perspective and journey. And I know we have a lot of young athletes out there that are listening to our podcast, and I know that they'll benefit a lot from your story. So just wanted to say thanks so much.
Well, thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity. Yeah, I responded to you really fast, and I tend to do that because if I look at it and I don't do it in that moment, I kind of just,
oh, nice,
just falls off somewhere. But so I used to have a podcast, and I'll, you know, let you guys end it off of this, but I used to have a podcast of my own, first couple of years in the league. So, and like I told you, TV broadcasting is something that I've, so anytime I kind of get a chance to do one of these things, and I love what you guys are talking about, you know, sports and mental health and all those different things. So stuff that needs to be on the forefront a lot, especially in this, age. I was like, oh, this is a no-brainer, because I get a lot of, not a lot, but I get a decent amount of different opportunities to do things with podcasts. And, you know, obviously, I think saw that you, obviously, you of you guy, and you played soccer and you still play. And, you know, I've looked up a little bit of you, and I was like, oh, this is a no-brainer. So I'm appreciative of you guys carving out some time to make it happen, and it was really, really fun, and I hope that you guys continue to reach new heights and new levels of sharing this great message that you guys are doing.
Thank you, Zach. That was very, very kind.
We appreciate
kind.
That
we're,
a lot.
We're honored. Yeah.
No problem.
Go Bengals. We'll be following you this season.
Yeah, for sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Debrief of Zach's episode. I thought it was great. It was really fun to hear his story.
He was cool.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Do you have your ditto of the day, or do you need a minute?
Yeah. No, I have like three.
Okay, go for it.
I'll share the one I think that was the most influential in my mind that he was describing throughout his whole experience. Mm-hmm. And you're probably going to say this one, and my apologies.
It's okay.
You can take it in so many
different
angles.
We'll see.
So
we'll see.
We'll mesh them in together beautifully, like we always do.
Yep.
I mean, this idea of controlling the controllables it's so cliche in sports psychology / really sports. I mean, he heard it from his coach, and I've always said coaches are the best sports psychologists. But it's so cliche for a reason, because it works. It's directly or synonymously related to this idea of acceptance and acknowledgement, which we know on this podcast is the power skill when it comes to psychological skill sets, this idea of acceptance. And throughout his time in high school and then going across the country to college and then from college to professional ranks and then from one team to the next and then one team to the next, becoming a father, getting married, like, I don't know what that's like, but I would imagine it's stressful. Mm-hmm. And I know you're quote unquote a professional athlete and you're making money. How can you be stressed? Mm-hmm. It's like,
nope, wrong.
Okay, put yourself in their shoes. Yeah. And I know you can relate to this. The pressure is, I would imagine, something that is really hard and really high and really is hard to describe unless you're in it as the athlete or as the person. Mm-hmm. And so in my mind, it's like acceptance, acknowledgement. That's the power skill. That's going to help you get through this stuff, transition, get traded, get drafted, and thrive and continue to, you know, find success and be where he's at. So the acceptance, the acknowledgement piece is really largely the theme that I took away from Zach's message, which was awesome.
Yeah. It's always cool when other guests or athletes or whoever they are bring that part up on their own. Cause it's just like, another reason why it's like important. It's like ding, 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 ding.
I know.
But yeah, no, I decided to have one that's a little different since we always happen to pick the same one. But the part that he was talking about when he was wanting a trade and because he like wasn't playing as much as he would have hoped and the coach like told him that it probably wasn't going to happen, and he kind of talked about that like weird limbo phase that you can be in sometimes when you're not, you know, it's really easy to like get out of your routine and to kind of like drop your standards a little bit because you're like, oh, I'm not playing. Like you don't see the benefit, or you don't see like why you're working for what you're working, because you're like, oh, I'm not playing. Like, what's the point? I feel like that's a kind of a phase in athletes' career that people don't talk about a lot because it's so not glamorous, and but it's a very individual decision that you have to make, and you have to be very intentional about it. I've been in that role before too. It's like it's one of the hardest roles I think to play. It's a lot. Yes, it's hard work to be a starter day in and day out, and to like have that pressure to constantly like perform and produce results. But that's also a very like privileged position to be in, and some people take it for granted. But to be that person that's asked to show up every single day and not get the opportunities to see the field, but to still show up and practice and play every single day like you're going to see the field, is really, really hard to do. So I thought that was cool that he talked about that, because it's not often something that we talk about a lot. And I know that there's a lot of people who will experience that in their career, or when they experience it for the first time, it's like, whoa. What do I do? Because like you said, like having an extra glass of wine or eating an extra donut, it's like, I won't hurt, but like, will it? Cause then your opportunity will come. And if you're not ready, that extra donut is going to hurt a lot more than you thought it would at the time. So I thought that was interesting. I thought that was cool that he shared that.
Yeah. Absolutely. That perspective, I think, is another power skill. Like, just to be ready no matter what, even though you might not actually, you know, be put to use for weeks or months. It's, yeah, again, I can't imagine being in that position, but what a wonderful perspective and helpful perspective to have.
Yeah, takes a lot of discipline, but cool. Well, Matt, thanks for inviting our friend Zach on. We wish him the very best.
He's my BFF. We're officially BFFs.
Yep, yeah, sounds for like sure. it. Awesome. Well, thank you everyone for listening. Please like, share, subscribe, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Bye, everybody. Thanks for joining us.